Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
We need to talk about this. This is big news, and it has been for the last couple of days. Because when Taoiseach Micheál Martin was in New York recently, he said he had no issue with the principle of vaccinating children age 5 and over against COVID-19. Now, this comes on the back of news that Pfizer are currently awaiting authorization for a vaccine, which they say is safe for use in children between 5 and 11. So joining me now to consider some of the questions around vaccinating children of this age is Professor of Immunology at Dublin City University, Christine Losher. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Listen, thanks so much for doing this for us. Because once I mentioned you were coming on air, we had so many questions and messages coming in. So we'll kick off. And I want to ask you, if the vast majority of children who contract COVID-19 experience only mild symptoms or not at all, why would it be necessary for them to be vaccinated?
Yeah, and you know what? I think that's the kind of question that a lot of people are asking when it comes to this issue. So, first of all, even though the majority of children will do really, really well, there will be a small percentage of children who will get quite sick and who will have that multi-organ kind of inflammation, who will have hospitalizations and severe illness. So while it's not a huge number and it's quite a small percentage, there's still a risk for children that they will get a severe illness. And I think what we know from all of the things we've seen about COVID-19 is that you don't know how you're going to be until you actually get the virus. You can't kind of predict that. People who think they're healthy, think they might do quite well, actually might do quite badly. So that's the first thing, is that there's still a chance that a child will get very, very sick. The second thing is that there's been lots of data now about long COVID, and people are only kind of starting to understand really what that is. And really what it means is that symptoms that anybody has from COVID kind of persist for a few months afterwards. And there was just a big study just done in the UK, and there's been several kind of scientific publications about this in the last couple of months. And there is between 5 and 12% of kids get long COVID symptoms. So potentially kids could be experiencing fatigue or headaches or loss of smell for a couple of months afterwards. And I suppose the question then is, how does that impact on their broader life? So if they're very fatigued, how's that impacting on their sports, their social activities, their education? And they're all the things that I suppose are the additional considerations around vaccinating kids. It's not just about the vaccine and the infection, but it's actually about what that means for their whole life, I think.
Okay. To your knowledge, Christine, what does the research say about possible side effects of the vaccine in younger children?
Yeah, so the Pfizer just completed their trial that was specifically in 5 to 11-year-olds, and they compared them to vaccination in 16 to 25-year-olds. And essentially, what they're reporting is, and what they've submitted to the FDA for approval, is that the vaccine is safe and that they give a good antibody response that's comparable to what the older children would have had. So their safety profile, they say, is very strong. The kind of side effects that they get are similar to side effects they've reported in other age groups, predominantly around soreness, swelling of the arm, fever, some fatigue afterwards. And that's generally the kind of side effects. We don't know yet whether there will be other additional side effects. And what I mean by that is that when we did the 12 to 15-year-olds, we didn't see any myocarditis or heart inflammation side effects in the trial. But when the US rolled it out at scale, we started to see other side effects. So while the trial is saying that they're very, very safe and that there's no issue that they've picked up on that's different from anybody else, until it's rolled out at scale, we can't be absolutely sure about what the rare side effects are, because you have to vaccinate millions of people to see rare side effects.
Absolutely,
so I think we'll be lucky, though, because the US will roll this out before anybody else, and we'll have millions of data from, sorry, we'll have data from millions of kids before I think we'll ever have to make a decision here in Ireland, to be honest.
Because there's no way of really knowing the long term effects. I just got a text in. Christine says, I'm wondering if you could please ask regarding fertility issues, long-term, short-term for female children, teens. I know myself and anecdotally from friends that their menstrual cycle was affected, most notably in the first period following vaccination. Thanks so much. That's from Trish. What do you make of that? Would you have concerns for fertility issues long-term? But can you even answer that because it's so long-term?
Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, nobody can ever predict long-term side effects, okay? But what I can say is that there's never been a vaccine that's had any impact on fertility or any long-term side effects for fertility. And therefore, there's no reason to suspect that this would be the same. There's okay. two things, I think, that have come up in the kind of social media kind of space that I think have raised questions about fertility. One of them was quite early on where somebody came out and said, actually, the antibodies that you make when you get your COVID vaccine attacks this protein that's found in your womb and makes you infertile. So I think that was the scary story that went around about 6 months ago that made everybody really worry in this age group. And essentially, that was something that was not made up, but almost kind of like over-exaggerated and by a scientist and got picked up by a load of anti-vaxxers and got blown out of all proportion. So just to be really clear about what that is, somebody said that the antibodies attacked at the spike protein and that looked like a different protein that was involved in fertility. And just that's just not true. So essentially, the protein looks nothing like the protein that's found in fertility. So there's absolutely no way when you get a vaccine, will you make antibodies that will attack any proteins that are found in your womb. So that's the first thing. The second thing is there's been lots, yes, absolutely, lots of anecdotal evidence that people have had differences in their menstrual cycles in the first cycle after getting vaccination. And just to say, when you get a vaccine, you have a massive, full-blown immune response, which is why people sometimes feel really tired afterwards. And essentially, when you have that kind of level of an immune response, other kind of physiological systems in your body get changed slightly. So people's appetite changes, for example. And really what's happening here is the same as what you would see if you had a massive infection. So if you have an infection, and people can think back over times they've had really bad infections, there is probably a chance that their menstrual cycle was interrupted then as well, because your immune system draws all the energy from your body to be able to get this immune response switched on, and other physiological systems sometimes kind of lag behind. So all of the anecdotal evidence would say this is a possibility, but it usually happens for the first cycle and then not again. And the reason why it doesn't happen again is because you've gotten over this big immune response to generate your protection against COVID, and your next cycle is normal. So that's kind of a normal phenomenon that we would associate with having a severe infection, the kind of immune response that has to be switched on, and how that kind of drains all of the resources from your body, and other physiological systems kind of lag behind. So that doesn't have and you know, has never had long-term impacts on fertility. So if you got the flu and your cycle was a bit all over the place for a month or two, the likelihood of you having any impact on fertility is practically zero. So I just think that I can understand completely. And actually, most of the emails and DMs that I get are actually from women of childbearing age saying, is there any truth in some of these things about fertility? And I think those are the two things that have kind of worried people about it. And I think, you know, it's really important to say to people that the interruption in menstrual cycle is a natural phenomenon that's associated with the energy required to have an immune response and can be seen in infection. And if you look at the scaremongering that happened, I suppose, earlier on in the year, there is no absolute scientific truth to the fact that your antibodies might attack something in your fertility system. So I hope that really kind of reassures people that there's nothing to suggest that there's any impact on your fertility, either short term or long term.
Mm. I suppose just thinking of that, you know, with fake news stories like that, if there is no scientific proof in these stories, I wish a response would come out quicker to put people at ease and stop the spread of these stories, you know, escalating and escalating, then the fear of God is in everybody.
Yeah, and absolutely. And I was speaking to this about, you know, 4 or 5 months ago when the scaremongering happened and stuff like that. And you kind of hope that people listen back on particular podcasts where yeah. you focus on that. I think it kind of got overshadowed by the emerging kind of issue around vaccination in pregnancy. And I suppose that was a huge focus then, and it kind of got shelved a little bit. So I think it's great that, you know, we've had time even on air today to kind of raise it again so that people can actually have the reassurance that some of this information just gets distorted. It gets picked up on social media, and then people stop looking for where the source of the information came from, and they're just looking at the information. So categorically, there is no relationship between the proteins in your fertility system and any of the spike proteins in COVID.
If the vaccine is approved, what would be some of the things parents of children five and over just might need to consider?
So essentially, in any kind of decision about getting a vaccine, and everyone's probably heard this, you know, it's all about the risk benefit. So it's all about what's the risk if you get the infection versus what's the risk if you get a side effect from the vaccine. So that's kind of a starting point. OK, but I think with COVID, there's kind of that wider impact on children's lives. So really, when we saw NIAC's decision for the 12 to 15 year olds, we all saw that they didn't just consider the risk benefit on whether they get infection and whether they maybe get long COVID or any side effects from the vaccine. They talked about their engagement with social activities and education and the impact on their mental health. So they made a decision based on what was maybe best for that child and what choice should be given to the parents. If you're trying to decide, and I'll have this decision as well. One of my four is in this age group, so I'll have this decision to make. And at the moment, based on the safety data and what I know from all the rest of the data around Pfizer and Moderna, I'd be quite happy to have her vaccinated. But the decisions that the parent makes are, number one, does your child have an underlying condition? That's a really different decision, because sometimes that makes it a necessity for a child to be vaccinated just to keep them safe. Does anyone in your household have an underlying disorder that makes them vulnerable, that if the child did get COVID and expose them, even if they are vaccinated, would that impact on the vulnerable person in the house? And then what is the wider impact, do you think, on their education and their social engagement if they got COVID and they had any other symptoms? And you weigh that up against what are the chances of them having a severe effect from a vaccine? And the rare severe effects of vaccines are very, very small. So some of them are one in a million. Some of them are one in 180,000. So the information the parents should be looking at is, what's the safety data from Pfizer saying about their trial? So far, it says that it's very, very safe. The second thing is that when you're looking at this vaccine for children, this is not just a new vaccine that we just made for kids. We've given it to tens of millions of people around the world. And for the most part, it is safe. Yes, there have been some rare events that have happened, and they happen with all vaccines, and you can't predict that. But for the most part, this has been a very, very safe vaccine. So, you know, don't consider the vaccine just in this age group. Consider the vaccine and the safety data that we have in general from Pfizer and Moderna, because there's tens of millions of people have already got it and are very, very safe. So they're the kind of things that people should consider when they're making decisions for their children. And I think that even if we got to the stage where NIAC was to approve this, ultimately, it just gives parents a choice, and then it's up to the parents.
And speaking of choice, and speaking of being informed and consideration, if you do want to vaccinate your child against COVID-19, where is a good place to go for reliable information, would you say, on this? Yeah, to consider, because you gave some very good questions there, like, do they have underlying conditions, anybody in your house, you know, the risk factor. Where can people go right now to get good information on this?
So the latest lot of information that was brought out that gave really solid information to parents where they're making the choice between the 12 to 15 year old age group. And again, I had a kid in this age group and I had her vaccinated. But the all of the information was on the HSE website.
Okay.
And actually, they gave not just, oh, you know, let's all get your kids vaccinated and these are all the positive things. They gave the stats about what are the potential side effects. And the one that was in most consideration for that age group was these incidences of this heart inflammation that they had found when they rolled it out in the US. So they gave the incidence. It was a little bit different in males and females. They gave all that information. They had links that clicked on to further information where people could find this. But essentially, if people really want to get down to the devil and the detail about the safety data and the trial data, it is published. So you can find a paper online, a scientific paper, where it's actually published. But what I'd say to people is that, you know, one of the things that I did was I looked at real world data. So I went online and I looked at the stats from the UK. I mean, the UK kind of, you know, some of their stuff went a little bit belly up when they kind of didn't vaccinate certain cohorts and they kind of let infection kind of happen. They had huge numbers of kids actually with COVID, but it actually gave us really good data about what are the chances of your kid getting long COVID. And all their public health data from England, I found really useful in terms of just educating myself about what is long COVID, what is the incidence that they're seeing in the UK. They'd have similar kind of, you know, they'd have similar kind of setup to us,
yeah,
in terms of lifestyle, etc. So I looked at real world data. I actually looked at a lot of the data in the US. And like, even though people kind of give out about Google, I mean, using Google to put in search terms about COVID-19 vaccines in small children, you'll get a whole load of information. But my starting point was the HSE website, because all of the really clear information about the vaccine, what it was trialed on, what the side effects are,
it's all there.
All of that was
okay.
There.
Okay, well, that's good to know. The pros and the cons and everything. I mean, and there's scientific papers there. I mean, you can judge for yourself. If it's written on the back of a beer mat and posted on Facebook and shared by someone that you don't really know, I think you can gauge it that way. Can I ask you then, I know it's a hard question to answer, but when do you think the vaccines for the over fives will be rolled out?
So the EMA have only just, you know, so the FDA are looking at this right now. The next people to look at it will be the EMA. Okay. And they'll decide for Europe whether they approve that in Europe in this jurisdiction. And then it's up to each country and it'll come to NIAC and NIAC will consider all the data. I don't think as parents we'll have to make any decisions until early next year about whether we even want to have our children vaccinated. And that's because I think that the EMA, first of all, will lag behind the FDA, and that's the FDA normally approves everything first. And I think that the rest of the world will watch and wait and see the real world data from the US and potentially Israel. And that will give us a lot of really good data about whether or not it's a good idea. We'll be able to see, does it really change the incidence of infection? Does it really change the overall case number? How is it impacting on the general population?
Okay.
So I don't really think we're going to be, like, NIAC's not going to be considering this till later in the year. I don't think it's going to be a choice for us until into early next year.
And speaking of choice, do you see a world where we have to have our children have this vaccine to do things like go to school, or will be like a choice for the parents and the family to make when the time comes?
Yeah, I mean, like, I am not a fan of mandatory anything, like when it comes to vaccinations. I mean, I think that, you know, the way to address hesitancy around vaccinations is education, is letting people ask the questions, is, you know, acknowledging that people have concerns and trying their best, I think, to be able to address those concerns. I think we've done a really good education and communication campaign around vaccine in this country, and that's why we've had such good uptake.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I've been on the receiving end of a lot of anti-vaxxers, and not in a nice way, in the last couple of months. But I think that there's a lot of them are very concerned people who are potentially missing a lot of information. So I think that, I think mandatory vaccination almost pushes people further to the other side. I think we need to try and ask questions about why are people not buying into vaccination? What are their issues with vaccination? And trying to figure out if we can actually, you know, give them the right information to kind of convince them otherwise. I also think that there's an awful lot of people that have taken an anti-vax position early on this, and they just don't want to change their minds.
Yeah. Yeah, you're dead right. I think you're dead right. Can I ask you about the clinical trial data on COVID vaccine for children as young as 6 months and over? They're also due at the end of the month. Is that right?
They're due, yeah. So they said quarter four. So they're due, I think, from either the end of this month or early November. And again, like, so the only difference in that those children would be that they've given them a smaller dose. So the 5 to 11 year olds, they've just finished, they gave them a third of the dose that they gave the older children and the adults, and their antibody response was just as strong. So that's really reassuring. And then in the younger children, the 6 month to 2 year olds or to 5 year olds, they've given them a third of that dose again. So they've only given them 3 micrograms.
Okay.
So they've given them a very low dose. And, you know, given that the safety data has been so good for every age group and cumulatively in the tens of millions of what they've given out all over the world, there's been great safety. We would expect that the safety data for this age group would be very strong.
And if you want to check up on the data, it's all online. Go to the HSE. It will direct you to all these papers and data that you want to educate yourself on. Professor Christine Losher, thanks so much for joining me on the show this morning. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks, Christine. That was Christine Losher, Professor of Immunology at Dublin City University. Very clear and balanced discussion on vaccine for children there. If you missed that chat, if you just jumped in at the end, we do podcasts, all our chats. You can go to Spotify or Apple, wherever you get your podcasts, and search for Jennifer Zamparelli. I think it's a really important conversation. If you have kids, a really important conversation to listen to. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.